I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations are on the upswing, driven largely by the highly contagious, more transmissible Delta variant, and by people who are not vaccinated and are spreading the deadly virus. According to the CDC, this variant represents 83% of the new cases in the U.S. Being vaccinated provides strong protections against contracting the disease and largely prevents serious illness if you do contract the virus, but only half of the population is fully vaccinated. So today on Radio Times, the unvaccinated. And we begin with Luna Lopez, senior survey analyst at the Kaiser Family Foundation, about their recent survey on vaccine hesitancy. And Luna Lopez, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
This was a survey that began actually back in January and updated in July, looking at respondents of whether they were or were not going to get vaccinated. What did you hope to understand?
Sure. So at KFF, we've been conducting public opinion research on COVID and the vaccine since throughout last year, and as a vaccine looked like it was going to be made available, we started our COVID vaccine monitor project. And so we've had the opportunity to survey nearly 20,000 Americans about their experiences and concerns about the vaccine. So with the survey that we released in June, we had the opportunity to go back to some people that we interviewed in January, where we asked them, do you want to get the vaccine as soon as possible? Do you want to wait and see before getting it? Will you only get it if required, or do you definitely not want to get the vaccine? So we had their views on the vaccine from January, and we were able to kind of go back to them now that the vaccine's widely available and, many adults have gotten vaccinated, and see if they had changed their minds or if they had indeed, gotten vaccinated if they said they would. And so that's kind of really, it really provided an opportunity for us to dig in why the people made their decisions to either get vaccinated or not get vaccinated.
Well, let me start with the vaccinated. 92% of those people who said back in January that they wanted to get vaccinated have at least one vaccination, correct?
Right. So what we saw is the vast majority of people who in January, said that they wanted to get vaccinated as soon as possible, they have, done so, right? So like you said, 92% of them have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine.
And about half of the wait and see got at least one vaccine.
Right. So we also saw that, a majority of the people who in January had some hesitancy, right? So they said that they wanted to wait and see how the rollout went and how other people getting the vaccine were doing before they got vaccinated themselves. Well, a majority of those people have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine at this point.
And then the no, 76% of those who said they were definitely not going to get the vaccine or would only get vaccinated if required, stuck to their guns, so to speak.
Yeah. So what we saw is that most of those who, were kind of in that most reluctant group of either saying they're definitely not going to get it or would only do so if they were required to, most of those individuals still remain unvaccinated at this point.
And what are their reasons?
Well, a lot of the concerns seem to be around, there are some concerns about vaccine side effects, but really some of those most reluctant, so these kind of, these people who were definitely not and remain definitely not when it comes to the vaccine, they really, there's a sense there that they're not really at risk for COVID-19. Some feel that the vaccine and the side effects that they may experience from the vaccine are more of a threat to them than COVID-19 itself. So,
do you know where they got their information? I mean, what is behind these attitudes?
Sure. Well, we don't, we don't really know exactly where they're getting their information. We didn't ask or be able to go deep enough to get specific sources of information. But what we have seen in other surveys is other recent surveys is that among about 2/3 of unvaccinated adults either believe or don't know if a myth about the vaccine is true or not. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of kind of doubt and, lack of awareness of, what's true about the vaccine and what's not. So we do see that that is an issue among adults who remain unvaccinated.
I'm looking at your survey here. The main reason you are not vaccinated, the top one, as you mentioned, was side effects. Then too new, unknown, not tested enough. Then don't think they need it. They don't want it. Just want to wait and see. Don't trust the vaccine or vaccines in general. I have a condition that prevents me from getting the vaccine. COVID-19 is not that bad. Vaccine is worse. I mean, just to sort of drill into the attitudes of the people who do not want to get vaccinated.
Yeah, so there are still some people who remain in that wait and see category, right? And so these are the people who are still, you know, when you ask them why they haven't gotten the vaccine yet, they're the ones who are most likely to mention kind of concerns about safety and side effects and how new the vaccine was, how quickly it was developed. So a lot of these people who are still in the wait and see, that's really, you know, the reasons that they're giving for why they haven't, you know, kind of gotten vaccinated yet. Whereas when you get to the more reluctant, you know, individuals who say they definitely don't want the vaccine, they're the ones who are more likely to give the responses that they don't see it as a, you know, they don't see COVID-19 as a big threat among, or they don't think they need the vaccine.
I thought what was interesting for those who were on the fence, one of the things that got them to get the vaccine was, frankly, family and friends who got the vaccine, and they saw, oh, they don't have side effects. You have some quotes here. Almost all my friends were vaccinated with no side effects. Family members and friends got vaccinated and no serious side effects. Not many side effects, and others have been vaccinated and going on from there. I thought that was an interesting, I guess, a little experiment that they were running for themselves just to see how the vaccine would affect people that they knew.
Yeah, I think we saw, you know, in going back and asking people what did you learn or hear, what persuaded you to get vaccinated, we really saw that the role of family and friends and conversations with family and family members and friends really played a role in persuading people, nudging them to get the vaccine. And so this is something that, you know, as you mentioned, they saw their family and friends getting vaccinated. They just had these discussions with them. They saw that they weren't getting any kind of serious side effects from the vaccine. And that convinced a lot of people to go ahead and get the vaccine. And, you know, a lot of times also the role of just family members asking their unvaccinated family to get vaccinated also played a role. Hmm. We had one quote where, you know, somebody just said, my husband bugged me to get it, and I just gave in. So these are the kind of conversations that, you know, people all over the country are having. And ultimately, you know, it is a medical decision, and it's quite a personal decision for people to make. And a lot of times when we have these kind of decisions, we do turn to family and friends to, you know, to get their counsel, but also their perspective. And so here's an opportunity where, you know, everyone's kind of having to make the same decision, right? And so you could see that the conversations with family and friends will really play a role in potentially moving, especially some of these adults who are unvaccinated and say that they want to wait and see. They're particularly, likely to be moved by some conversations with family and friends.
And what about the role of doctors? And I'm also thinking of, religious leaders. There's talk about sort of trusted members of the community who can change people's minds or at least help think them or talk them through their reluctance and resistance. We actually did a show with a barbershop owner and a woman who does, you know, has a hairdressing salon and the role that they play. Did that come up at all?
Yeah, I think what we see is that it's really about those personal relationships, right? And because these are the people that you trust, right, in your life. And so they're not one group necessarily that's going to be, these ideal messengers. It really depends. For certain people, it comes down to who do they trust. And a lot of us trust and look, you know, and see with our eyes what's happening with our family members and friends who are getting vaccinated. And then we also have these kind of community leaders in our lives that we trust. And so they for sure can play a role in kind of helping, have a discussion with people who may be hesitant about getting the vaccine.
Which does raise questions about PSAs where you have celebrities or political leaders. I know that former President Bush and Obama and Clinton, had a PSA where they told Americans to go get vaccinated. Does that say that that's maybe less effective?
Yeah, I think what we see, again, it comes down to really a variety of messengers because we can't really know which one is going to get through to specific people. And so I think that from what our data shows is that really those personal connections tend to be more effective, right? And then to some extent also conversations with their doctors who know their, you know, the person's medical history and know their vulnerability to COVID-19. That can also be quite persuasive. And it seems like these kind of more general, celebrities and things like that, mm-hmm. well, potentially it can, you know, get the conversation started, and that's a great. But it really seems that from what we've seen for the real difference maker for people who in January said they, you know, were a bit hesitant about getting the vaccine, but came around and got vaccinated, seems to be those kind of conversations with family and friends.
And for those people who decided to get, who were reluctant but decided to get vaccinated, was it that I need to protect myself, I need to protect my community, I need to protect members of my family who might be vulnerable? What were the reasons that they decided to get a vaccine?
Yeah, so, you know, a top reason really was kind of protecting themselves and, reducing their risk. And just in general, they want to avoid getting sick. And then for sure, there was also a sense of protecting family members and community and, you know, but I think it really comes down to there's a real variety of reasons why people are going to make this decision. Right. And it, you know, and that's why those conversations are important, because you really have to kind of get to the underlying motivations of the individual, and who better to do that than their family and friends, mm-hmm. who know them so well.
Because we should say, or I should say, that the unvaccinated, they're not a monolith. I mean, people have their own unique reasons for not getting a vaccination.
Absolutely. And like we said, when we were discussing, you know, some of the reasons why people remain unvaccinated, you know, those who are concerned about safety and side effects, you know, they're very different than those who are unvaccinated and feel they don't need the vaccine or don't feel that COVID is a risk. So, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why people aren't getting vaccinated, and that's why there's going to be public health officials will really have to try a variety of messages to really reach them.
And I want to pick up on that with our two guests who are waiting in the wings. Just final question, Luna, we're almost out of time here. Will you continue this survey, this study?
Yeah, so we're, our plan is to continue monitoring public opinion on COVID-19 and the vaccine as, you know, it develops. And obviously with the current, new variants, it's particularly interesting for us to keep measuring and seeing how people are, you know, how concerns are elevated given the, you know, changes in the pandemic moving forward.
Well, thanks for getting our conversation started. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. That's Luna Lopez. She is senior survey analyst at Kaiser Family Foundation. We actually posted their survey on our Facebook page. You can check it out. We're going to be talking about the unvaccinated. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. While half of Americans are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, half of Americans are not and are at risk for contracting the Delta variant, which CDC Director Rochelle Walensky told reporters this week is one of the most infectious respiratory viruses that I have seen in my 20-year career. Here's more of what she said this week.
There is a clear message that is coming through. This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We are seeing outbreaks of cases in parts of the country that have low vaccination coverage because unvaccinated people are at risk, and communities that are fully vaccinated are generally faring well. The good news is that if you're fully vaccinated, you are protected against severe COVID, hospitalization, and death, and are even protected against the known variants, including the Delta variant, circulating in this country. If you are not vaccinated, you remain at risk. And our biggest concern is that we are going to continue to see preventable cases, hospitalizations, and sadly, deaths among the unvaccinated.
Today in Radio Times, we focus on the unvaccinated, their resistance and reasons for not getting the vaccine, how their decision is driving this public health crisis, how to get them to think in more pro-social ways. Is the carrot or the stick more effective? And what is the role of disinformation and how to combat it? We have two guests who are with us here in our Philadelphia studio. Allison Buttenheim is Associate Professor of Nursing and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. She is Scientific Director of Penn Center for Health Incentives and Behavioral Economics. Allison Buttenheim, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. Also with us is Sion Banot, and he is behavioral economist and an associate professor of economics at Swarthmore College. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty. Good to be here.
Absolutely. And we got lots of people that have lots of questions already, but let me just make sure that our listeners can join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Allison, let me begin with you, and let's begin with this Delta variant. We heard from Dr. Walensky about how she views this variant. How do you view it?
Very similarly. It's scary. I think in the spring, we were feeling really optimistic that we'd be at a different place this summer. But then we saw around the world, you know, the UK and other places, how quickly the Delta variant can become the majority of the cases. And as Dr. Walensky said, it is so much more contagious. So the same amount of sort of protections that we had from the other variants will not do as well against Delta. And that just makes our vaccine coverage that much more important.
And as a sort of medical scientific question, the more vaccine that's swirling around the population, the greater chance of variants. Correct.
The more virus.
More virus.
That's correct. The Delta variant has much higher viral loads. So there's more virus in your nose and all your other fluids. And it means the chances of getting enough of that onto somebody else are much, much greater than they were with previous variants.
The health department in Philadelphia now says to wear, even if you're vaccinated, wear a mask if you're going to be indoors with other people. You're nodding your head.
That makes a lot of sense. And I've been fully vaccinated for a couple months, but still popping it on to go in the grocery store, certainly, you know, airports, train stations, just indoors with anyone, you know, any situation where you don't know the vaccination status of everybody else.
To protect yourself, to protect others,
both,
to protect
the way
everybody.
It's been all along. Yep.
Well, let me turn to you, Sion. We already know that there was resistance to mask wearing. Now we're being asked to wear it again. Now there are concerns, obviously, about the unvaccinated and this Delta variant. As a behavioral economist, help us understand this resistance from your perspective.
Yeah, I think for me, the main thing I think about when thinking about the folks who haven't been vaccinated is really thinking about the power of social and political identity, right? There's tons of people out there who've defined themselves as sort of, I'm not going to get vaccinated. And they've tied that to their social groups. They've tied that to their political identity, right? I mean, I'm sure we can all guess the correlation between opinions about gun control and opinions about the vaccine. And that's sort of strange if you think about it. Yeah. Those are totally unrelated issues. But we tend to pool our preferences around similar topics and we follow the crowds that we identify with. And there's a lot of people who identify with crowds that basically don't want to get the vaccine.
Well, interestingly, just to underscore that, 86% of Democrats have at least one vaccine. 45% of Republicans have at least one vaccine, kind of underscoring what you're just saying.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, if you look at data at the county level and you put Biden vote share up against vaccine levels, I mean, it's a shocking correlation. I mean, it's almost perfectly correlated if you graph it. So there's clearly a political story that we can't shy away from, not just a medical story.
Well, I'm back to you, Allison. I mean, rolling back the clock. What's so curious about the Trump administration, on the one hand, they got this vaccine developed in record time, and yet we had the president and others who were undermining the CDC, undermining mask wearing, promoting bogus, you know, treatments for this for this virus?
Yeah, it's so frustrating because it feels like a lot of missed opportunity. And I know there have been calls for former President Trump to, you know, get on the airwaves and, you know,
maybe, who is vaccinated?
Who is vaccinated and does want to take a lot of credit for and, you know, pride in our vaccine program. Could he be one of these trusted messengers for these, you know, these counties or these communities where we see a strong relationship between voting for him and not being vaccinated?
Do you think that would work, Sione? I did see someone this week saying, well, let's call it the Trump vaccine or something. Let's, you know, let's celebrate it and give it his name. And do you think that would be persuadable?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's like, I always want to think about this in terms of segments. We're trying to convince different segments of people with different messaging. And so there's, I'm sure, a large percentage of people who, if Trump went on the air and said something in line with that, would be convinced. Not everybody. Right. I think there'd be a lot of people who still wouldn't go for a variety of reasons, but maybe we can use a different tack with those populations. So I do think it'd be great to see. I'm not holding my breath, but you know, that could be one of a several pronged approach.
Does that then undo everything that he said beforehand? I mean, if he said, okay, folks, you know, let's all do this together. I mean, it doesn't sound very Trumpian to say that. But
I think we've seen plenty of evidence that folks are willing and able to forget things that people said not that long ago. So I'm pretty sure that people would get on board.
You're nodding your head, Allison.
Yeah, the forgetfulness can work for us, can be on our side.
Just because what we're kind of forward thinking, or we don't remember things, or
we like things, especially our own behavior, to be quite consistent. And when it isn't, either we feel differently from how we used to, or President Trump is saying different things from what he used to, that doesn't feel very good. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways we get around that discomfort is just by ignoring or forgetting the previous the previous version,
as if it never happened.
Right.
Let me play a clip, and this is actually from Fox and Friends on Monday. We've got co-host Brian Kilmeade sending a kind of mixed message about getting vaccinated, while Steve Doocy, another co-host, is urging people to get the vaccine. And I think, you know, a lot of people get their information from news sources, Fox being one of them. Let's give it a listen.
But listen, if you didn't get a vaccination, that's your choice. And if you did, like I did and they did and maybe you did, then you should not wear a mask. And if you didn't, if you want to go cliff diving this weekend, you don't have to check with me. It seems a little dangerous, but I'm not going to judge you. And if you go ahead and put yourself in danger, if you feel as though this is not something for you, don't do it. But don't affect my life.
99% of the people who are dying from COVID are unvaccinated.
That's so their choice.
They don't want to die. The administration and the government is saying, we need the mask mandate to protect the unvaccinated.
That's not their job. It's not their job to protect anybody.
So much going on in there, Allison. I was looking at your face during that. I mean, this is a public health crisis. Do we have a choice?
You know, public health exists to protect populations and communities, and that's always going to bump up against folks who feel like this is all about individual choice and individual right. But when we heard, you know, that's not their job, public health folks feel like that is exactly their job. Mm-hmm. And when we determine that something like a mask mandate is going to protect, you know, that's the optimal way to protect people, that's the decision they're going to make.
Well, see, what about a mandate? I mean, you know, what if, I guess the Biden administration could do it now. It could have been done before. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I think about the segments and I think about people who, you know, don't like the word mandate. And that triggers this thought of freedom and you're impinging on my freedom. And that unlocks a whole other set of you know, sort of resistances to getting vaccinated. So I think it would help. I think probably the people who it would help the most are probably pretty persuadable anyway. You know, I was in the South during some of the mandate periods. You didn't see a lot of mask wearing despite the mandate in, you know, indoors. So I'm again skeptical. I think it would help some people, but I don't think it would help the majority of the people we really need to convince.
Well, so we have to learn to live with people who are not going to get vaccinated, correct? I mean, and the question is, will it be 10% of the population, 30% of the population, and that will make a big difference, I guess, when it comes to transmission and the pandemic.
Yeah, unfortunately, it feels like it's a slow rolling snowball down a hill, like where people are slowly being picked off one by one. But we need this to accelerate, to Allison's point, right? This is a public health crisis. And if people are slow to make their mind up, that's not going to cut it for us.
And when we heard earlier, the winter, the spring, that, you know, if we got to 70%, that would be pretty good. That did not take into account Delta. So there's an assumption now that our herd immunity threshold, that magic number that we have to get to, is actually quite a bit higher.
Really?
Because Delta is so much more infectious.
Like closer to 90?
You know, Dr. Fauci sort of moves around on that number a bit, but it's probably north of 80.
North of 80. Yeah. And we're not there yet. Let me just quickly reintroduce our two guests. That's Allison Buttenheim, again, Associate Professor of Nursing and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, Scientific Director of Penn Center for Health Incentives and Behavioral Economics. Siom Banot is a Behavioral Economist and Associate Professor of Economics at Swarthmore College, and we are talking about the unvaccinated. I do want to get to our comments, but I want to quote a doctor from Alabama. She got a fair amount of coverage, Dr. Brittany Cobia. She deals with COVID patients in the hospital. She says here, I'm admitting young, healthy people to the hospital with very serious COVID infections. This was on a Facebook post. One of the last things they do before they're intubated is to beg me for the vaccine. I hold their hand and tell them that I'm sorry, but it's too late. I mean, Allison, that is just heartbreaking.
I just got goosebumps hearing that.
I mean, for her, the patients, for their families and all of that. But it does raise a lot of questions about how you can get so close to death, really, and not sort of feel this wake-up call.
Yeah, and I think that doctor's post goes on to talk about talking to the family members of these, younger people who get very, very ill or die, and hoping that at least this experience will get them to go get vaccinated. You know, if you feel like this isn't a big threat and then you lose a family member, especially a young family member, hopefully that that changes some minds.
And we heard from the Kaiser researcher that, that the family and friends do have the power to persuade.
Yeah, certainly, and I think Allison would back me up on this. Cold, hard statistics, even when the numbers are big, are just not very persuasive to individual people, right? Individual stories, individual anecdotes. My uncle got vaccinated and XYZ good thing happened. He could go outside, he could go out with friends and it was really nice. And here's a video of him meeting someone's granddaughter for the first time, something like that. I think that is really much more compelling to individual people than X million, million people have had the vaccine. That just goes over our heads.
What about this headline? This is from The Inquirer earlier this week. Life expectancy fell 1.5 years in U.S., reflecting COVID toll. Does that resonate?
Yeah. Again, it's one of those. It's a cold statistic. It's shocking to us. And when we think analytically, it's kind of amazing. But how many people are going to be persuaded to go get the vaccine by that? I'm not sure. Of course, that's not the point of the article.
No.
Certainly when we think about persuasion, we really have to think about human behavior, human psychology. And then that's where the work that Allison and I do in the social sciences, I think, becomes pretty important.
Here's a comment from Susie. I hear these comments from my family. Quote, I already had COVID and everything I read says I have immunity, so I'm good as vaccinated. And, quote, the risk of dying from COVID is the same whether you get vaccinated or not. Family members have sent me articles with statistics that show this. There is, Allison, you can call it disinformation, misinformation, but there's a lot of wrong information that's swirling around that people do connect with.
Yeah, I think the pandemic has raised so many things in our society, and one of them is this infodemic, right? We have just this, it's been a fire hose of information. Not all of it is good, and not everybody has, the research background, the math background, the stats background to critically evaluate that information. And the we look for the stuff that we already believe in. We sort of pay attention more when it aligns with our views, and we're good at not paying attention to stuff that doesn't. And you can find information that backs up your beliefs anywhere. That's not hard.
Let me read one more comment. This is from Thomas. Please ask your guest to comment on a nudge. Those who are vaccinated should get a deduction on their IRS filing. Those who do not should pay a health fee for those who may get infected. Sion What do you think, as a behavioral economist? What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I think that it feels icky to incentivize people financially, but we do that for lots of things, and it can work. And again, it goes back to the point: for some people, that'll be the ticket, right? Mm-hmm. I know that some. You know, some bars were giving out free beer to people. You know, what was it? A shot and a shot?
Or a shot whatever, and a shot. Call it.
Yeah.
Right.
And look, that worked for some young people. They wanted to get a, you know, get a free drink. So, you know, I think we have to think creatively. And I think people are thinking creatively. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to accelerate those ideas and start scaling them up.
Such as?
Yeah. So, you know, financial incentives could be part of it, right?
Paying people a couple hundred bucks or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, right. It could be a lot, you know, having lotteries. I know a lot of states have implemented lottery plans. You know, it's really nice to have somebody who became a millionaire because they decided to get a vaccine and states are trying it. Now, is it working? I mean, it seems to be, you know, seem to help accelerate, but that's kind of slowed down. So, you know, we need to start thinking creatively and quickly and scale up these projects without delay.
Allison, we're almost at a break here, but I thought it was interesting hearing from Luna Lopez that for the most part, people who got vaccinated did it to protect themselves. I mean, it wasn't necessarily pro-social. I mean, that was a piece of it, but it was largely for their own health and safety.
That's consistent with research from parents and vaccinating their kids. We know that it's usually not persuasive to tell parents that one of the reasons you need to vaccinate your kid is that other kids can't be vaccinated and you need to protect them. That usually doesn't help. And so this is consistent with, you know, most of these decisions are pretty selfish decisions, which is absolutely fine.
We should say we did have some guests. In fact, it was the barber and the woman who ran the hair salon saying from their clients they were suspicious about vaccines because of financial incentives, basically saying, if it's good for me, shouldn't I do it? Why are you paying me to get a vaccine?
Right. And that kind of makes me think back to the Fox and Friends clip and various, you know, articles that you've referenced. There's so many different stories for why you should do it, whether you should do it, you know, people citing their own statistics. And it makes me think about this concept of omission bias, this idea that when things are ambiguous, things are uncertain, we tend to drift towards preferring acts of omission rather than commission. So I don't know what's going on, so I'm just going to do nothing. And right now doing nothing means not getting vaccinated.
Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our two guests, Siyon Banot and also Allison Buttenheim. And we've got lots of comments and questions here. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and stick around. Much more to talk about.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with our guest today on Radio Times about the COVID-19 public health crisis. It is still with us. There's a new, very transmissible, deadly variant, the Delta variant. And we're talking about the fact that almost half of the population is not vaccinated yet. Some are waiting and seeing. Some are refusing. And we are digging in to try to understand that point of view and what can be done to persuade people to take that pro-social step. And again, our guests are Siyon Banot, a behavioral economist and associate professor of economics at Swarthmore College, Allison Buttenheim, scientific director of Penn Center for Health Incentives and Behavioral Economics. Let me play another clip from Fox, and this is from Monday. This is Fox News host Sean Hannity urging his viewers to get vaccinated.
Please take COVID seriously. I can't say it enough. Enough people have died. We don't need any more deaths. Research like crazy. Talk to your doctor, your doctors, medical professionals you trust based on your unique medical history, your current medical condition, and you and your doctor make a very important decision for your own safety. Take it seriously. You also have a right to medical privacy. Doctor-patient confidentiality is also important. And it absolutely makes sense for many Americans to get vaccinated. I believe in science. I believe in the science of vaccination.
I mean, Allison, a very strong message there coming from Sean Hannity.
That was great to hear, and, you know, hit some points what we would have expected someone like Sean Hannity to hit. You know, it's a personal decision. It's you and your doctor, and privacy is important. But overall, that was fantastic.
Mm. I mean, it should be said there are other hosts there who do not have that same message. Let me read a comment from Bill. I have one family member who hasn't gotten vaccinated yet and is beginning to think about it. Her thoughts are changing in lockstep with what the stars of Fox News are saying, her only source of information. Interesting. I mean, and talk about a trusted messenger, right, Sion?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't surprise me at all that's the case. And I think in those cases, you don't want to gloat with those individuals. You want to kind of be empathetic, tell them you love them, and you know you're happy to talk to them at any time. I mean, one thing to note in the Hannity clip, which I found interesting and a little frustrating, you know, this idea of research like crazy, right?
Yeah.
Go on the internet and Google things, and that's not really necessarily the best story. It certainly frustrates me as a researcher to tell people to do the research on COVID. We've got tons of researchers like Allison and others who are actively, that's their job to do the research. And they're telling us and they're showing us in mm-hmm. learned journals that nobody's looking at that these vaccines are making a big difference. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend that people research like crazy because you'll find anything, as Allison said, on the internet.
Absolutely. I mean, go to the CDC, which does raise questions about the level of mistrust of government, of institutions, of the healthcare system. As we know, Allison, for not all, but certainly for African Americans, there's been a history of racial discrimination, Tuskegee, and all of that. And I think that does explain at least some of the concern and some of the hesitancy on the part of some people in this country.
It does. And I was thinking about the that correlation, that graph that Sion mentioned, where percent vote for Trump and percent vaccinated was highly correlated. The outliers on that graph at the county level are primarily counties in the Deep South with large majority Black populations. And you really have to think about distrust issues, mistrust issues, but also access.
Right.
You know, we
mm-hmm.
sort of assume that because these vaccines are available, that they are accessible. And, you know, people have busy lives. They have worries about missing work for side effects. They may have trouble accessing, you know, the internet to find an appointment 5 miles away, which is the Biden administration target that everyone be within 5 miles of a vaccination site, is a long way to walk. If you don't have a car or public transit access. So it's the unvaccinated is, as you said earlier, is not monolithic.
Yeah.
There are a lot of reasons why people haven't gotten there yet. And a lot of that is not, I don't want this vaccine.
Well, how do we get to these people who are, in a sense, disconnected and also mistrustful for I think, obvious reasons?
Right. I think it's a combo of meeting people where they are attitudinally, which are these repeated conversations with trusted peers, your pastor, the community health worker that maybe is talking with you about other issues in your life, and meeting people where they are physically. I've had this fantasy in Philly that we would have vaccine on ice cream trucks this summer.
Oh,
tootling
what a great
around.
Idea.
They have freezers on the trucks already. Add a nurse and 10 doses, and if you can get those out, you know, during the day, like I would call that a success. But again, in places, you know, these vaccine deserts, you know, mobile access, door-to-door access, we've got to have more availability at people's primary care office. That's starting to happen, but this should just be part of routine primary care now. And, you know, the segments that Sion mentioned are important here. Right. There's different reasons that people aren't vaccinated yet and different strategies to close those gaps.
I hate to go back to conspiracy theories, but Sion, there is one related to going door to door, which is they're going to come and they're going to take your guns. They're going to take your Bible. We're hearing this from members of Congress.
Right. So people will always fit facts into some narrative that suits them. Right. So they have some narrative of whatever the federal government is always out to get you, and they're putting microchips in the vaccine and all, you know. And so that's the segment thing. That's a segment of the population. That's going to be a very hard segment to mm-hmm. reach. And in a sense, not that we don't want to reach them, but we may not need to reach that group if that group is small enough. Now, I hope it's small.
Right.
But certainly we see that over and over, this idea of confirmation bias, that people will find facts that suit their narrative. And as soon as you can string a couple of facts together to suggest that the vaccine is door-to-door campaign is somehow nefarious, you're going to convince yourself that that's true, and it'll always be easy for you to do that.
Because you want to believe it?
Because you want to believe it, and because you only seek out information that supports that belief. So you'll go online, find a message board where somebody's got some, they came to my door and they said X, Y, and Z, and now suddenly that anecdote outweighs all the, you know, all the research and all the rationality, let's say, of a vaccine push.
Is Facebook killing people, as President Biden said, Allison?
I mean, there's a lot of terrible, terrible stuff on Facebook, and that is probably persuading a small segment of the population to stay away from the vaccine. But it's also been a vehicle for some good information and you know, people having productive conversations. So I don't want to put all the blame on our vaccination gap on Facebook.
Here's some more comments. In my opinion, from Patricia, the politicization of the COVID-19 vaccine puts the entire population in peril, especially for children who still cannot get vaccinated. You nodded your head, Allison.
Yeah, and this is actually work Sion and I have done together earlier in the pandemic, surveying online some adults in Pennsylvania. And one of the things we tried, this was way back before the vaccine was available, was trying different ways of telling people that the vaccine would be available. And we compared saying, you know, President Trump is very excited about the vaccine and it will be available versus scientists and experts are very excited about the vaccine and it will be available. And of course, we saw differences based on your party identity on for whom that was persuasive versus not persuasive. And it is highly, highly politicized.
Yeah. Is there a way to depoliticize the vaccine point?
You know, in a sense, many of the errors are, you know, we can't take back. So in the early days of the pandemic, you know, the conventional wisdom in public health was keep the politicians out, you know, get the scientists up front. But now, you know, Dr. Fauci is a political figure, right? And in an ideal world, that wouldn't have happened, right? Mm-hmm. And so the characters at the beginning could have been depoliticized. And I think it's hard to, you know, row that back, because now you put a doctor on TV, and if the doctor is saying get a vaccine, people think, well, they probably got a political agenda, right? They're somehow tied to the system and the elites. And so, you know, as soon as you plant that narrative in the public consciousness, it's really hard to pull it out of there.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. It's sort of the melding of these two jobs or responsibilities and how that can undermine public health.
Yeah, no, it's an unfortunate reality that I think a lot of medical professionals would I think confirm that they're seeing more and more that people think that they have some ulterior motive when really their motive is public health.
Yeah. Here's a question from Angela. For people who have had COVID in the past and have antibodies, how does the vaccine help them? People who have had a mild case and have antibodies and haven't gotten the vaccine are different from the people who have never had COVID and refuse to get it. But just her original question, Allison, about if you've gotten COVID, are you protected?
So not a virologist, not an immunologist, not a medical doctor, but the research I have looked at on this topic suggests that the vaccine provides a substantial marginal protection over the antibodies that you've developed naturally. That's not true for all vaccines, for all diseases, but for COVID, you get a big boost in protection, even if you've had the disease.
Sion, here's a question from Jerome. Now the public health officials are telling people to mask again, even vaccinated people. Won't that cause unvaccinated people to say to themselves, why bother?
Right. And, you know, this kind of makes me think back to when the initial restrictions were put in, were relaxed, by President Biden, you know, several months ago. You know, a lot of people that probably fit their narrative that COVID is overblown, you know, all this mask mandate stuff is over the top, and now finally they've come to their senses and it's actually not a big deal. So now suddenly that decision, which, you know, we could understand and some of us
Chrysler
were thrilled with,
says the agreement couldn't
were,
be the
you
end
know,
of the
suddenly
line
became
for a long-
something that you know, may have actually hindered us, right? And so, you know, looking at that, if we're going to bring the mandate back in, how will people react to that? You know, I think people for whom the relaxation was kind of, see, I told you, are going to think, oh, these people are trying to control me again, right? And so that might actually not work for the populations we need it to.
And for those who are vaccinated, they're saying, well, this is my reward, right, for getting vaccinated, was I don't have to wear a mask, and now you're telling me to wear a mask again.
That's right. And I think another politicization of all of this has been that we somehow for some people, masking seems like this incredibly burdensome thing. You know, if we could go back and redo things, if somehow masking could be framed as like not that big a deal, it's not that hard. You know, there's reasons for it, and there's places you need to and places you don't need to. But it's become this, you know, this burdensome thing that we need freedom from, which is too bad.
I mean, think about seatbelts. Exactly. I mean, I'm thinking of things where I think hopefully most people, without thinking, put on their seatbelt. Yeah. Here's a question from Harold. Are active duty military personnel mandated to get the vaccine? Is there any number of how many active military are vaccinated and going on from there? Do we know that? Let me just jump on Harold's question and add my own, which is I see more, including WHYY, I see more companies saying you can't be in the building if you're not vaccinated. Do you see that, Sion? Do you see that as a positive?
Yeah. So, you know, I unfortunately don't know the facts on the military. So I'll defer to Allison or someone else.
Okay.
You know, I do think that we're seeing more and more of that. I certainly know that my institution at Swarthmore recently said that, you know, faculty and staff have to be vaccinated, though recently, you know, several months before, they said students would have to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a recognition of the Delta variant and the reality that we've got enough evidence now. We, you know, maybe we don't want to employ people who won't do it, and they have a lot of these organizations have policies for people who don't want to get vaccinated to slowly move out of the organizations, right? Yeah. And I do think that matters. You know, if airlines said, you know, you can't fly unless you have a vaccine, period, because we're a business, we can tell you how we want to run our business. I think things like that would make a big difference. People would really say, okay, now this is mainstream. Like, you really, it's just like any other vaccine that we all got as kids. You know, and we just have to do it, period.
Yeah. A vaccine passport, there's even been talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me. We heard from Luna before from Kaiser Family Foundation. One of their categories for, you know, how I feel about the vaccine is I will only get it if required. And so it also becomes just sort of a simplifying reason. Guess I have to if I want to keep this job, which is helpful.
Here's a question from Jeannie. I think all the coverage about the relatively small number of breakthrough cases is also hurting vaccination efforts. Should we? I had that same thought myself. I'm back to you, Allison. And there are breakthrough cases. They're very small. I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to be an expert on the air. But they get a fair amount of media attention.
They do, and there's been a lot of interesting discussion in the media. Catherine Wu had a nice piece in The Atlantic about how that term breakthrough case is unfortunate, draws a lot of attention. It's also really hard math to talk about as our vaccine coverage goes up. You can think about the extreme case. If 100% of people are vaccinated, all of the cases will be among the vaccinated. And even as you get to 80 or 90%, even if the cases are 50-50, vaccinated or unvaccinated, that still demonstrates the effectiveness of the vaccine. And that is tough math to wrap your mind around.
This is sort of a weird question, but I was thinking about this. You know, when dealing with toddlers, if you say, no, you cannot have, you know, this toy, that's the toy that they want. And I'm wondering, Sion, whether if we said, no, you can't get the vaccine. As a matter of fact, you had your chance and now you can't.
Right.
Whether people would actually want to get the vaccine.
Yeah, so there's this idea in psychology around reactance where, like, you tell people, don't do X, you know, don't run by the pool. And then they're like, I wonder how fast I can get away with running before you yell at me, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe people with kids recognize that. But there's certainly that. There's this kind of natural reaction that when you feel your freedom impinged, or somebody telling you what to do or trying to control you, you feel like, yeah, I'm going to exert my independence and my humanity. And so if we can find what, you know, it's like reverse psychology, right? So if we can find a way to convince people that, you know, this is a thing that, yeah, right, we're going to start sending it around the world and you missed your chance and good luck. I'm not sure I advocate that policy, but it may work psychologically.
Almost out of time here, Allison. Are women more likely to be vaccinated than men?
I haven't looked at those stats in a while, but in the early rollout, that was definitely the case. It wasn't a huge difference. When we were seeing a difference, that was also when healthcare workers were one of the main group that were getting vaccinated. And of course, they are more likely to be female. And also when older people were getting vaccinated, and there's higher proportions of women than men among the oldest ages. But I haven't looked recently if that's close. Yeah. Up.
Well, I really appreciate you both coming in and joining us today on Radio Times. Such an important conversation. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. And again, Sion Banot is a behavioral economist at Swarthmore College. Allison Buttenheim is scientific director of Penn Center for Health Incentives and Behavioral Economics. We are talking about the unvaccinated. You can carry on this conversation on our Facebook page, and you can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us.